So there's a growing acknowledgement that punishing individuals won't stem piracy. But cast your mind back a decade or so ago, and you'll recall that the RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, spent years pursuing and suing individuals for illegally sharing and downloading music. The group sent out letters to some 30,000, mostly young people, offering them a choice between settling for a few thousand dollars or a court battle. Those threatened, almost all chose to settle. One kid who illegally distributed thousands of songs, including this one and the ones you'll hear in the next report, didn't settle. OTM producer Chris Neary has the story.
Now, the RIAA wasn't planning to cash in with these settlements. A couple thousand dollars was not the cure for the industry's plummeting profits. No, the settlement was merely intended to sting infringers and scare potential infringers. Here are a few old clips from college news services.
I was like, what is RIAA? So then I opened it and, you know, then it read like, you know, basically you're being sued by the recording industry. And then I was just like, oh my God.
Last night I talked with the RIAA and was able to come to some sort of an agreement. I'll have to pay them $3,000 over the next 6 months.
I mean, I probably got away easy because in the past I have downloaded music and $3,000 probably covers it. I probably will never download music illegally again.
Obviously, they settled. The recording industry had subpoenaed their internet records, and it was worth a few thousand dollars to avoid a court battle. The students were outgunned, and they knew it.
I had the distinction of being the judge with all of the file-sharing cases in the District of Massachusetts.
That's Nancy Gertner. Today she's a law prof at Harvard.
It was an extraordinary array of lawyers for the record companies who would sit at one table, and then individual A, B, or C coming with his or her mother or friend sitting on the other side, unrepresented and frequently having not the slightest idea what the proceedings were about.
Gertner took the unusual step of holding conferences in her courtroom with a dozen or more students, where she'd explain what was happening.
I didn't know what else to do. In about 2006 or 7, I began to offer a list of lawyers for people to use, pro bono lawyers, so that they could be represented if they chose to be represented. All of this was basically just to try to level the playing field.
One student who got a pro bono lawyer is still in litigation, 10 years after he received his first letter to settle. He's the last man standing in this battle. The judgment against him currently stands at $675,000.
My name is Joel Tenenbaum, and I'm a researcher at Boston University Department of Physics.
Back in the 90s, Tenenbaum put thousands of songs on peer-to-peer networks. Ultimately, the RIAA, who declined to comment for this report, sued for just 30 songs. How does he feel about those songs now?
They were probably picked among like the most popular songs they could possibly pick, and so now, of course, they're completely and entirely played out, so I can't really listen to them anymore.
I asked Tenenbaum, why didn't he just settle when he had the chance?
I think it's a ridiculous question. I think that that's like going to a schoolyard, seeing a bully beating up a little kid, and then going to the little kid and saying, why do you keep getting beat up?
Tenenbaum's pro bono lawyer is Charles Nesson, regarded as a legendary thinker on copyright. He's also regarded as an eccentric. In a student lounge, Tenenbaum explained how Nesson prepared him for a deposition.
There's the judge, who's the king, and the lawyers, who are the wizards. And the wizards will conjure up all sorts of spells in an attempt to persuade the king. Your role in all this is the farmer, and you have a goat, and you're sticking to it, and that's your goat. And you can just watch the wizards perform their various acts. I was like, oh, okay. And then I called up my mom, and I said, Mom, what the hell do you think he meant by any of that?
Just think about it. You'll get it.
Early on, Tenenbaum didn't help himself. While answering written questions from the RIAA, he suggested that other members of his family might have been responsible for the songs on his hard drive. Then, during that deposition, he lied.
I mean, I admit that I probably said misleading things. I thought it was the best decision at the time.
Finally, in open court, he did take full responsibility for all that downloading and sharing. But his behavior damaged his case. And observers say it hurt him with the jury. And even though he was standing up to the whole recording industry, the media didn't see him as the good guy in the story. But his lawyer did.
Well, Joel, to me, is a man of a piece with Aaron Schwartz and Dan Ellsberg and Manning and Snowden. He's an individual who chose to challenge what he saw as injustice.
If that seems like a little much, you should know that 40 years ago, Charles Nesson defended legendary leaker Daniel Ellsberg in the Pentagon Papers trial. That was a very public case, and Nesson wanted the same publicity for Tenenbaum. So he broke a state law by recording and posting a conference call with opposing counsel. And he argued strenuously, unsuccessfully, to have the case streamed on the web. Getting the story out there, Nesson reasoned, would turn the public against the recording industry.
The idea of an open defense was just what we wanted. We have nothing to hide. That was the thought.
Has that worked?
No.
Professor Nesson gave this very theatrical performance.
Ben Schaffner covered the trial. Now he's the vice president of legal affairs at the Motion Picture Association of America. But he spoke to me as a former journalist.
He brought in sort of a styrofoam cube, and he sort of crumbled it, and it sent pieces of styrofoam flying all over the courtroom. And he explained that this was his illustration of the changes in the music industry throughout the the 90s and the 2000s, that the exploding bit of styrofoam was a representation of a CD sort of being atomized into individual songs.
Nesson's argument hinged on a novel application of the fair use doctrine, that since Tenenbaum's generation didn't have a way of legally getting digital music in the early 2000s, its downloading and sharing wasn't copyright infringement. But because he hadn't told the court he planned to launch that defense, under the rules, he wasn't permitted to present it.
The issue that I wish I had been better at crystallizing was the limited nature of the damage that Joel did. They succeeded in making themselves the victim of what everyone had done and of pinning it on Joel. I somehow should have been better able to protect him.
After Tenenbaum admitted to downloading the files, the only thing left was sentencing. The jury ruled he should pay $22,500 for each of 30 songs. That's where that $675,000 number comes from. The key thing to understand is that the RIAA sued him for statutory damages, not actual damages. Ben Schaffner.
Under statutory damages, the copyright owner does not actually have to show how much actual damages they incurred. In a lot of circumstances, it's difficult or impossible to figure out exactly how much in actual damages a copyright owner has lost. And that's especially true on the internet.
With no way to measure the actual damages in this case, the judge instructed the jury to choose a number between $750 per song and $150,000 per song, a range laid out by Congress in the Copyright Act. If they'd gone with the max, he would have owed $4.5 million. So that $675,000 number, that number actually shows leniency by the jury. After the decision, Gertner reduced the verdict to $67,500, but she was overturned when the record companies objected to a judge reducing the jury's penalty.
I somehow believed and continue to believe that underneath all of our laws and all of our statutes, there is a principle of fairness. The verdict in the case seemed demonstrably out of whack with what the companies had lost, what Tenenbaum had gained, whatever the measure, the traditional measure of damages had been.
In June, Tenenbaum and Nesson lost an appeal on the judgment. They'll appeal again. Tenenbaum says he'll probably have to declare bankruptcy. The RIAA has long since stopped suing individuals. But critics of the judgment say that unless Congress narrows that huge penalty range or draws a distinction between people who make money by infringing and those who don't, like Joel Tenenbaum, this will happen again in other corners of the internet. A Chicago law firm has been obtaining the ISP records of people who have infringed on copyrighted porn. those illicit downloaders are now being presented with their choice. Settle for $4,000 or face that penalty of up to $150,000 per infringed work after a battle in open court. If jurors didn't have much sympathy for Joel Tenenbaum, how are they going to feel about someone who's been sharing porn?
For On the Media, I'm Chris Neary.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.